Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we focused on AFib, the most common of arrhythmias, and how it is diagnosed, staged, and treated, including an assessment of COVID's impact and new technologies in electrophysiology. This month, we examine sleep disorders and how sleep specialists are helping each patient develop an ideal sleep strategy. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. There's a universe of reasons we don't get the sleep we should, along with a growing list of identified short and long-term impacts of chronic sleep deprivation, longer even than the shelves of sleep aids at the store or sleep rituals and products online. Americans throw a lot of time and money at the problem, hoping to land on a solution for some shut-eye. But Deborah pulmonologist Dr. Zeeshan Khan tells us in this month's podcast, if you've been struggling with sleeplessness for a while and hoping the latest over-the-counter remedy will fix it, you're dreaming. A medical evaluation with a sleep study monitors your brain waves and can help you find out definitively what's been keeping you up at night. More on all of this with Dr. Khan.
Well, sleep disorder is any kind of abnormality or dysfunction with your sleep. And sleep has typically been defined by most societies is when you're not awake, right? Absence of wakefulness. There's a whole gamut of sleep disorders. The newest classification, I think, came out about a year ago, and it has over 60 disorders. There's seven big broad categories. They can include anywhere from sleep apnea, snoring, insomnia. Then there's always the interesting parasomnias, which are sleepwalking, sleep eating, and obviously the list goes on and on. So there's quite a large list of disorders.
So what are the most common ones that you treat?
So the most common ones are typically, especially here at Deborah, we see a lot of sleep apnea, whether it's obstructive sleep apnea or central sleep apnea. A lot of times it's been linked to some cardiac issue, but it's also very common in the general population. Then insomnia is also very common. It's, you know, rough estimates are about a third of adults suffer from insomnia of some sort. We also see a lot of restless leg syndrome, which is also another very common condition. And then we also see some unusual things like narcolepsy and some of the parasomnias we spoke about.
What's some of the weirder, odder, more surprising parasomnias, sleep things?
I guess odd, you may not have heard of something called REM behavior disorder. So it's this condition where typically it's found in older men. REM sleep is a sleep that's supposed to be a deep sleep and your body's paralyzed and you dream a lot during that sleep. So people who have this issue, they're not paralyzed. They can actually act out these behaviors. So if they're dreaming of something specific, they start acting at that behavior in the middle of the night. And that can be interesting. Sometimes it can be violent in a nature. So it can be, you know, sometimes spouses might tell that the patient is either being violent, either hitting or cursing or something. And obviously the patient has no recollection of that, right? So that's something that's interesting that sometimes we encounter and can be treated. I mean, obviously we see other things like, you know, sleep eating and all that stuff too, sleepwalking and things.
Now, when that happens, the person doesn't remember that at all, though, right?
No. Depending on what the issue is, yeah, usually they don't remember. Sometimes they can remember the dream, but they don't remember doing that stuff, correct, yeah.
And does that show up in a sleep study, in a sleep lab?
Some of them can. Sometimes we catch it, yeah. Not all the time, but we can. There's kind of indirect markers that we see that we can use to kind of, along with the history, use that in conjunction to diagnose somebody with that, yeah.
And how does that relate to pulmonology?
So that's a great question. So sleep, for many years, was this multidisciplinary kind of field. So initially, a lot of psychiatrists, neurologists went into it, but a lot of pulmonologists got involved because of sleep disorder breathing, which entails sleep apnea and central sleep apnea and things like that. So now we have people who specialize in sleep from all different disciplines. But traditionally, either psychiatrists, neurologists, or pulmonologists got into it.
How much sleep should we have?
Generally, the recommendations are anywhere between 7 to 9 hours, roughly, for adults. And again, the recommendation is based on that it's an average. So there are definitely people that are on the extreme end where they only need 4 to 5 hours and they function well. And then there's on the opposite spectrum, too, where people need 10 hours to function well. But most people need about 7 to 9 hours.
I was reading something about colonial Americans, and it was not at all uncommon. They did sleep for like 4 hours, get up, do a few hours work, and then go back and sleep another 3 or 4. It would get dark at night, you went to sleep, and then you get up, light a candle, do a little more, and then just pick up the rest of it at the tail end. This whole notion of however much sleep is required, should it be in this big long chunk, or is it perfectly normal and okay to, you know, wake up in the middle and then
catch up later?
Yeah, usually we recommend to do it in a consecutive block, but there is that afternoon dip that a lot of people experience, and that's where you get that, you know, sometimes in some cultures taking a nap in the afternoon is very common.
But I'm talking about if your sleep is interrupted at night.
For like big chunks, you're saying?
Well, yeah, should you get up, and is it okay or is that unhealthy? Should you really, really try to roll over and get all your sleep at night?
Yeah, usually we want it to try to get in a big block, yeah.
In one big block.
Yeah. And I think like what you're referring to a lot in the past too, things were different only because light, mm-hmm. right? So light changed a lot because in the past when it got dark and they didn't have electricity, even a candle is really not that bright, right? But now with obviously electricity, people can function almost like stimulating, you know, daylight. So we still recommend to try to get it a block at a time, yeah.
And it also makes me wonder whether Ben Franklin may have been one of those people who manages on 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I think he was famous for saying there'll be plenty of sleep in the grave, right?
Yeah, we'll sleep when we're dead, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you hear that. Yeah, I mean, Margaret Thatcher was famous for saying she only needed 4 hours. I mean, Martha Stewart claims she only sleeps 4 hours a night. That's very annoying. Okay, so there's sleep, and then there's being in bed. That doesn't necessarily mean you're getting the sleep you need, even if you've turned out the lights. And so how do you quantify the kind of sleep you should have?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So we've seen, especially patients who suffer from insomnia, you know, the difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, they tend to overestimate the amount of time they're awake and underestimate the time they're sleeping. Because it may be also because the quality of sleep they're getting, maybe they're getting light sleep. So a lot of times when we all have light sleep, there's that kind of period where you're kind of awake, you can hear things, but you're still sleeping, right? So technically it's still sleep, but you can obviously still hear a little bit. But
is that good quality sleep then?
No. Obviously you want to get into a deeper sleep, right? And really the way to really know the quality of the sleep is to do a sleep study where we monitor your brain waves, right? But, you know, there are other things that we use now with technology. Everybody's phone or smartwatch tells you how long they're sleeping, right? But again, it kind of indirectly calculates how much time you're not moving. So if you're pretty still and your heart rate's low, it's going to assume you're sleeping, even though you may be just lying in bed relaxing, right?
And it's something we all stress about, clearly, and yeah. We're stressing about it more than ever. How do you know if you have a sleep disorder? What are the signs?
Typical symptoms of common sleep disorders are, for example, if you have sleep apnea, you may suffer from snoring. Your partner may tell you that you stop breathing, or you may be waking up gasping for air. You feel tired, sleepy, not refreshed. If you struggle from insomnia, then you have difficulty falling asleep. It takes you at least over 30 minutes to fall asleep, and you may wake up multiple times and still have difficulty falling asleep. People have issues with concentration. Sometimes they can have mood changes where they're moody or they have mental health issues because of their sleep. Those are typically the most common symptoms. Again, there's based on what the issue may be, maybe other things. Sometimes people sleep for long periods of time or they're very sleepy throughout the day. Example for narcolepsy, things like that. So those are some common symptoms that may kind of make you think whether there may be something wrong.
Circles under the eyes, bags under the eyes.
Yes, for sure.
So the causes of all these sleep disorders, can our bad habits disorder our sleep? Or is it always connected to some kind of a medical thing? How do sleep disorders arise?
Yeah, so that's an excellent point again. So yeah, there are certain medical issues that can drive sleep disorders, but there are a lot of behavioral things that we do too. So in America, it's very common for people not to sleep enough hours. So a lot of us are sleep deprived, right? So that's a behavioral thing that we've all done because how life has evolved, right? That we're always busy, we have phones, we're doing all kinds of things, multitasking. So that's actually one of the most common reasons for people to feel tired, not refreshed, and sleepy throughout the day. Then there's also obviously people who, based on their work schedule, so there's work shift disorder where they work at nighttime, they have difficulty falling asleep during the day because, again, they're trying to shift their schedule. Again, there's unusual things that people may end up doing at nighttime too that disrupts their sleep. So keeping a routine is very important. But getting back to the medical issues, again, sleep apnea has been linked to a lot of cardiovascular issues, high blood pressure, strokes, heart attacks. Restless leg syndrome is also linked to certain things, and the list goes on and on in terms of how many medical diseases are linked to sleep disorders.
Now, you talked about sleep disorders and bad quality sleep, but, you know, having these health implications down the road. Can a sleep disorder be a sign of something systemically going wrong?
Yeah, definitely. So, especially in our clinic here, we encounter a lot of patients who unfortunately have either suffered from a serious heart issue or they've gone through a stroke And after that, they've been referred to come see us because, again, it's very common for them to have underlying sleep disorder breathing or sleep apnea that's driving some of those issues. We don't like to say that it's the cause, but it definitely could be a trigger and a reason for things not being properly controlled or treated. I think it's important for people to realize, too, again, that if they feel like they have certain issues in terms of they're not feeling refreshed, feeling tired, that it's always important to speak to their regular doctor. And then if they feel it's necessary for them to come see us or, you know, get a sleep test, then go that appropriately.
Physiologically, do men and women sleep differently? Is one or the other more prone to sleep disorders?
That's a great question. So a lot of certain conditions are definitely associated based on sex and gender. So, for example, sleep apnea is typically more common in men, but once women hit menopause, that risk actually becomes almost equal. So it's interesting, we see that. So it could be a hormonal thing, right? And again, there's other conditions that are more prevalent in men or women too. And it could be for either hormonal issues or behavioral issues, whatever it may be, but definitely there are certain conditions that are linked to a certain gender, yeah.
So it isn't just the hot sweats for women going through menopause?
No, but definitely that makes their sleep worse, okay. For sure. Yeah.
But basically, if we took that out of the equation, there are still gender-linked
yep.
or suggestions that,
correct,
that
yeah.
affect sleep. When do you need to consult a pulmonologist or have a sleep test?
Yeah, depending on how much either the patient themselves is feeling the symptoms or their family is seeing some of these symptoms or, again, their doctor is concerned based on their risk factors, that's usually a good sign that probably needs to be considered and probably see a sleep physician who can kind of do an evaluation and decide what needs to be done next.
Do people resist that?
They do. I mean, I think in general, people resist medical care for different reasons, you know. A lot of times people are hesitant, especially with sleep, because they always assume that they're going to be attached to a CPAP, for example, and they say, you know, a lot of times patients walk in, they say, I want nothing to do with that right off the bat. But I think it's important to, again, see the right professional, and based on the recommendations, you kind of go from there, yeah.
All right, so this whole sleep test thing, the sleep study, demystify it for us.
So the sleep test, it's been around for quite a while, but the basic idea is you typically come into a sleep lab, which is either in a hospital or a private lab, and you come there in the evening, you usually greeted by the technician who's there, and they typically kind of get you settled into a room and then they kind of get you wired up. So there's a lot of wires. That's intimidating for a lot of patients. So because we want to do an extensive test, we want to monitor their brain waves, their heart, their breathing, their limbs in terms of they're moving a lot. There's a camera in the room. A lot of that is hard to swallow for some people, but we take that into consideration when patients do testing because we realize it's not a normal night of sleep, but it gives us the best test we can get in terms of information. There also is obviously the home version of a sleep test, but I think a lot of people are under the impression that it can diagnose any problem, the home test, but unfortunately the home test is only designed for people who may have sleep apnea. So for any other sleep disorder, it's not helpful.
Okay, so you're clearing your schedule, you're booking yourself into the sleep lab for the study. In the ramp up to it, you got to be off coffee, you need to be, I mean, how do you prepare yourself for the sleep study so that yeah. you can get all the information you, Dr. Khan, really yeah. need?
So, you know, we want it to be as close as to your normal sleep routine as possible. You know, when you meet one of us or a sleep physician, they're going to guide you in terms of they want certain medications to be taken or not. That may affect your sleep quality.
So if somebody's popping Benadryl to sleep every night and they're coming in for a sleep study, would you say, okay, so do what you usually do, pop the Benadryl and, you know, we'll hook you all up and we'll see how that goes?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what I'm looking for, right? If I think that they suffer from insomnia and that's why they're taking the, you know, the medication, and I tell them not to take it, they're going to tell me that, listen, I'm not going to sleep at all. Then I might tell them, okay, maybe you take it and let me see what happens. But if I know that, you know, I can get good information without them taking the medication, then I certainly will try.
Okay, and if somebody says, oh, you know, I always have my mid-afternoon cappuccino, you know, get me through the day, you'd say, all right, let's see how you sleep in the lab tonight. Or if, you know, well, you know, I have my gin and tonic every night. I mean, seriously.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, do you want the most normal routine?
Typically, yes. We want to keep it to the closest to their routine as possible, yeah. Just because we're assuming that's what's bringing them in is, right? The routine, the issues with that is what's causing them to come in, yeah.
Wow, okay. And so they come in and you get them all wired up and somebody says, well, you know, I watch Kimmel every night or, you know, late night TV. Do they also continue their regular?
So there are actually TVs in most sleep labs in terms of the rooms to make patients more comfortable. But there is usually a lights out time in most labs, whether it's 8, 9, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. But if the patient really goes to bed at 12 or 1 o'clock, then the technician might push it a little longer just to allow them to try to fall asleep. Because obviously at 10 o'clock, if they're wide awake, there's no point in turning off the lights, right, and seeing what happens.
Well, you know, this is what I'm kind of trying to understand, because it'd be a weird feeling anyway.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as too much sleep?
There can be. So two important things. One thing is, again, there are normal people who need longer sleep. We call it long sleepers. Also, like short sleepers, they've been linked to medical issues long-term, possibly. But the important thing is we want to rule out whether there's an issue with that, right? So if they have a medical condition that's causing them to sleep longer, and if we can possibly address it and treat it, that may make things better.
But if you were always, like your whole life, you could sleep 12 hours at a stretch if nobody woke you, that would not be considered?
Yeah, usually we use the cutoff, like more than 10 hours is a little unusual. So that means, again, we would want to look a little deeper to make sure there's nothing else.
What's the youngest patient you've had for sleep disorders?
Here at the hospital, we only see adults, but I have been trained with pediatrics as well, but we usually just see typically starting 18 and older usually. Yeah.
But sleep disorders can be common among children?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's very common, yeah.
How does it differ? You know, and is that something that might require intervention later?
Yeah.
Or is a clue for, you know, you're going to have apnea down the road?
Usually kids, it's very common for them to have behavioral sleep issues. So meaning that they don't want to go to bed and they're having a struggle with their parents, or there's some other reason why they can't fall asleep. So teenagers, we see it a lot because they become more of a night owl. So the parents are complaining that they're not sleeping. They're sleeping all day. But when we kind of dig deeper, it's because they're not going to bed until 1 or 2 o'clock, right? So that's more behavioral. Even with little kids, trying to put them to bed is a process. So sometimes that can cause issues. But there are definitely, obviously, children who have sleep apnea, similar issues, and they need either surgery or some kind of treatment for that.
And their functioning life is, you know, go to school or you know, a little older, they've got jobs and stuff. But for adults, when they can't function because of a sleep issue that's leading to a health issue, then life pretty much grinds to a halt or limps along, not as fun as it should be.
Yeah, usually, I mean, we always say kids are resilient, right? So they may manifest their symptoms differently than adults. So a lot of times, especially if they have difficulty, either their sleep's fragmented or they have sleep apnea, instead of complaining that they're tired, they have issues with focusing and they're very hyper, right? So they have behavioral issues during the day. So the teachers may notice things like that, as opposed to adults where they may just say they're just tired and sleeping, falling asleep in class, things like that, right? So.
And cranky.
Yeah.
That's Deborah, pulmonologist Dr. Zeeshan Khan. Fear not the sleep study. We'll continue our talk about sleep disorders and getting your sleep cycle back on track in our next podcast, which, as always, drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.